Everybody, including you, including me, needs a little help. Even if you have trouble admitting it. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. It's just that simple. And if your sales needs help, it may be time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy and gamified way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn some new advanced strategies to close the next deal. You know, sales, closing, that's what it's all about. Or creating the atmosphere where the other person wants to buy. We have hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting, you name it. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge anywhere on the planet that you can actually use 1 minute after you learn it. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com today and sign up for a free demo. I love free, and so will you. Jen.
Hey, Jeffrey.
You know, I was on iTunes yesterday, and I'm pissed.
Why are you pissed?
They deleted some of our stuff because it's, quote, too old.
It's because we produce so many episodes. Oh. They only keep a certain amount. I don't know what that amount is.
So here's the deal.
Yeah.
I talked to Doug, I talked to Nada, and we are going to get some of those episodes back because they were classic.
Love it.
And we're going to set them out again so that our diehards can take advantage of that wisdom that seemingly is off the air, but it's not.
Well, let's do it right now, like with this episode.
Cool. Let's
go. All right. Take a listen.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and my newest book, The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. We are interviewing leaders in business, sales, and personal development to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales and make more money.
Strategies that you can take out into the street and turn into money 1 minute after you hear them.
In a manifesto moment?
Well, no, more like in a New York Minute.
Oh, thank you to all the diehards out there supporting us with listens and five-star reviews.
Be a star on Sell or Die. Leave your own review. Come on. Go to your computer right now. Go to iTunes right now and write down, type down, talk down exactly how you feel about this podcast and how it might affect others.
All right. I want you to enjoy today's show. Take notes and tell us what you think on our Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
All right, let's get to it. It's time to sell or die. Scott Lees is one of the top startup sales leaders in the country. His near-death experience with illness led him to discover sales and startups, where he achieved success using the dedication, process, and drive to compete that he had honed as a multi-sport athlete and through the fight to take back his health. Lees is the founder of Scott Lees Consulting, LLC, and serves as a senior vice president of sales for Qualia Labs and serves as a strategic advisor to a number of startups across the globe. His first book, Addicted to the Process, was released in May and is available on Amazon. Please help me welcome the great Scott Lees. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
How's it going
Welcome.
Out there in California?
I'm actually in Austin today. I'm doing great, though. I'm in Austin today, not in San Francisco for once.
Got ya. And I'm assuming that you told us briefly that you were just surfing out in Costa Rica. What's that like?
It was gorgeous. It was about 80 degrees every single day and nice 2 to 3 foot waves. Went there with my family and another family that we're friends with. Took the kids, got them surfing. It was great.
So is that like one of those endless summer movies from the 60s?
Yes, actually. Robert August, who's one of the guys in that endless summer movie, the first time I ever went to Tamarindo, he was there. And it was like a total starstruck moment for me and some of my friends just to chat with him. So that would be a big goal of mine one day is to replicate that movie.
That's cool.
That's cool.
What would you call it? Endless sales?
Sure.
I love it. So okay, Jeffrey mentioned in the introduction that you had a near-death experience, and I know that I've heard some near-death experience stories, and the thing that I've always heard is it changes someone's life. And can you tell us about your experience, what happened, and what how it's changed your life or impacted you?
Yeah, sure. I was going to grad school at the time. I had just turned 23 years old, and all of a sudden just started having really serious health problems. Led me to basically be in the hospital, multiple different hospitals, for the better part of 4 years straight. I had a lot of surgeries, a lot of procedures, all sorts of things that you don't want done and don't want to hear about. The recovery process was brutal. I was missing organs and all sorts of just brutal things. Got pumped full of narcotics during that experience for all those years. And once I was done healing from the illness, I had to get off all the drugs because I was a drug addict at that point in time. And some of the surgeries were, you know, kind of straight from the movies. Like, we got to get this guy into the operating room right now. It's not gonna make it, kind of thing. And so, you know, I think you can probably go one of two ways. You can go through things like that and use that as an excuse the rest of your life and just kind of wallow in all the pain forever, or you can use it to fuel you and motivate you moving forward, and you get a good appreciation of how fragile life is and, you know, the limited opportunities that we might have. And so we better pour ourselves all into that.
So you obviously had choices when you left that hospital, and your choice was to go on the methadone program or kick it and get to a point in your life where it was meaningful.
Well, I actually went cold turkey, to be honest with you, against doctor's orders. They told me that was a really bad idea, and I just really didn't care. I was at a place where 2-3 weeks of hell was nothing when I'd already been through 4 weeks of 4 years of hell.
Exactly.
So I got through that part pretty quick. And then, you know, I had no background in business or sales or anything like that. I had a psychology degree in college. I had a minor in religious studies. My master's degree is in learning and instructional technology, just nothing to do with, you know, sales. And so I had to figure out what the heck I was going to do with my life. And I picked sales very strategically because it was the only thing I could think of where I could kind of make up for lost time. And, you know, I played two sports in college, and I'm a very competitive person. And the idea that if I worked hard enough and I succeeded, I got paid more than somebody else, resonated with me. You know, as an athlete, if you don't perform, you get cut, and it is what it is. So I understood that part, and I thought that it might be a good arena for me to get into. And luckily for me, it's worked out pretty well.
So how did you get from being a sales guy to being a startup guy?
Well, I went straight to a startup, actually. That's where I got my sales career kicked off. I wanted to do that because I didn't fancy myself somebody who was going to be, you know, kind of a frontline entry-level worker for very long. So I wanted to go in, prove that I could sell, and then move into leadership position, you know, as fast as possible. And I figured that a very early stage startup was my best chance to do that.
And now you consult with other startups?
I do. Yeah. It's something that I've done for a few years, but really in the last year and a half, it's picked up, and I, you know, form my own company around it. And I really enjoy it. It keeps me fresh, you know, in terms of what kind of new technologies are out there, keeps me practiced and versed in selling to different type of industries and buyer profiles. Excuse me. It allows me the chance to, you know, kind of work with others and coach and mentor and give advice. And it's also good for, you know, networking purposes. I've built some good relationships in different parts of the country and different parts of the world. I'm really starting to kind of take myself more and more that direction.
So when you consult with a startup, what kinds of things are you thinking about and finding that they aren't thinking about?
Well, number one, I think people try to overcomplicate their product. You know, I think people who build products spend a lot of time thinking about every single feature, every single thing that this product can do. and they're so excited about it, you just want to explain it to anybody who will listen. Mm-hmm. But not everybody buys that way. You know, I tell the story when I consult with people, like, I'm not a car person at all. Okay. So when I go to the car lot, I care about like the color, the safety for my kids, miles per gallon, and that's about it. So if the car salesman comes over to me and starts talking to me about all these different parts and the engine size and all this kind of stuff, he lost me. Like, I don't care about all that kind of stuff. And so I find that a lot of sales orgs, especially at the very beginning when they don't really have a good defined process yet, they just overcomplicate things, you know? And so I like to work with them to simplify and really get down to the core of, you know, what problem are they solving for their potential customer? And why is that problem important? And how does their solution fix it?
On a personal level, do you charge by the hour or by the job?
I don't charge by the hour. I can't stand like admin paperwork kind of stuff. I don't want to track it, to be honest with you. So I just don't. I like to do, you know, right now, because I have a full-time job as the senior vice president of sales at a company called Qualia. I don't really have the time to travel around the country or the world and go in and, you know, meet with people for a couple of days straight and do jobs and things like that. So I started doing a lot of, you know, strategic advisory roles. Some of those involve equity. Most of them involve, you know, cash. And so it's just kind of by the job, I suppose, much more than hourly, which I can't handle. I'm not a good admin guy.
You talked about most of these startups don't have a defined process. And yeah. Your book, Addicted to the Process, is all about process as well. So what are some of the key factors and some of your strategies that go into play when you're building a process?
Well, the first thing that I need to do is I need to understand what problem the prospect has that they need to get solved. And that's going to be very different, obviously, depending on the industry and the product. Then I need to understand why that problem is important to fix. And I need to understand how I can create some urgency to fix that problem. And then I work with the team to simplify their solution in such a way that it doesn't overwhelm the prospect. And that's like the core for me of the process, is find pain, build value, create urgency, discuss your solution. So that's the very first thing that I try to do. And I like the consistency and the repetition. You know, again, as an athlete, we all have like idiosyncrasies. You know, you put your right shoe on first, or if you're a baseball player or you watch baseball, you see the guys, you know, mess with their batting gloves and their helmet and tap the plate. It's all rhythm and consistency. And so that's what I want the teams that I work with to develop. I want them to do it, you know, relatively the same way over and over and over and over again until it becomes, you know, much more natural.
An athlete doing practicing their skill. But I want to ask you, from a perspective of your athletic background, would you rather hire a salesperson that was an athlete, or would you find that the startup companies that you work with that have athletes in their management system respond better to your way of thinking?
Well, the first part is I love hiring former athletes, 100%. Team sports, individual sports, doesn't matter. I like the fact that they've, you know, disciplined themselves. They've worked extremely hard to become good at that particular sport. They've competed. They know how to win. More importantly, they know how to lose and how to forget about the loss so they can get ready for the next game. But I would not say that people who come from an athletic background, you know, respond better or worse to me than other people do.
But certainly they're coachable.
Well, not every athlete is extremely coachable.
well, but, let me put it this way. They all have coaches.
Yeah, they all have coaches. Yes. They all have coaches. Yeah, I think you just got to – I try to find people who want to learn and want to grow. that's a big, big deal to me. I'm not the type of sales leader that is looking to hire some, you know, superstar who thinks they knows it all and wants to be left alone. That's just not my thing. That's not what I do. I like to feel like I'm making an impact on people. I like people who are, you know, thirsty for knowledge and want to improve and, you know, want to steal my job and do what I do one day. I mean, that's kind of my goal, is to make myself obsolete, you know? So if I just want to help people get to wherever it is they're trying to go. And I find that athletes have been, you know, really receptive to that. And I think that people who were not athletic can tap into that competitiveness as well. There's certainly plenty of excellent people in the sales world who are not athletic.
And so how big is your team at Qualia?
Right now it's about 20. I started a year ago with 3. And so we've moved decently fast. I've got 20 on the sales side. The company is about 80 or so, I think, right now. We've got an office in San Francisco that's product and engineering, and we've got all of sales and customer success out in Austin where I live.
And as the SVP of sales, what's your secret to managing these salespeople? What's your secret to inspiring them?
Yeah, give us the sauce.
I mean, the secret to managing, I just try to make their jobs easier. So what I want is for them to bring me all the barriers that they have, all the reasons that they can't, you know, work harder or get more output, or why they can't get deals across the line, or why meetings are not sticking, or, you know, how
they
can
sound
we make
like
our
excuses to me.
Yeah, they might be, but if I can eliminate those excuses one by one by one, not only is our team, in my estimation, going to improve, going to get better, but their excuses disappear, you know? And so I don't have to listen to them as much. So, I push people pretty good. You know, I'm the type of person that, you know, you might have your best month ever, and probably 5 minutes later, after I give you a big congratulations, I'm going to be poking you a little bit, trying to figure out how we can do that much better next time, you know, and reminding you of where you were before and where you are now and where you want to go. And,
well, that's a sales manager's job, isn't it?
Yeah.
To better your best.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish every sales leader, whether they're vice president or director or sales manager, kind of operated that way. I've heard a lot of, horror stories, so to speak, you know, where people are just not getting coached and developed at all and don't have much interaction with somebody who's in a leadership position. And that's definitely not my style. You know, I sit on the floor with everybody. I've got an open calendar. I mean, I want people coming to me. I want people asking me for help. I want to edit, you know, email cadences and responses that people are thinking about sending. And I want to hop on calls and help people close deals and push things across the line. It's a lot easier to do that kind of stuff, I find, in early stage organizations, which is where I've spent the better part of my career. I mean, every job I've ever had really is getting a company off the ground from sort of zero to, you know, 100 million or so. That is the fun part for me. And then things on my end, things tend to change sometimes when you get around 400 or 500 people in the organization.
Yeah,
I spend my
politics.
Day in
yeah,
meetings
they definitely
and politics.
And, I've been yeah. there.
I don't, you know, I don't want to have a meeting for 45 minutes about what kind of snacks we're going to order for the office.
Exactly.
I don't care.
Let's go back for just a little bit. Obviously, you're doing sales leadership training and coaching right now. Were your coaches, when you were playing athletics, were your coaches impactful to you?
A couple of them were. You know, the number one person would be my dad. I mean, my dad is like the winningest high school girls soccer coach in Northern California, like above Sacramento.
Wow.
Ever.
So and, you could have a social life and get coached at the same time.
My dad played college soccer back, you know, before it was in vogue. He went to Niagara University in Niagara
in
Falls,
Buffalo.
New York. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And, yeah. So, you know, he coached my brother and I when we were little, and I've just watched him. I mean, he still coaches. He's 70 years old now. And I've just watched him for years and decades just dedicate himself to, you know, getting better, to making his teams better, to having an impact on, you know, his, the kids' lives and that he's worked with. And, you know, it's just,
that's great to have that kind of.
He's been a big inspiration. And then in college, I had a couple coaches that I got along with really well that, you know, kind of inspired me. My soccer coach, his name was John Brooks at Dominican University, and he was deaf. And, you know, just watching how he kind of overcame things and how he thought about things, we got along really, really well. So, yeah, the coaches can make a big difference. On the flip side of that, I've had a couple coaches that weren't that great. And so I know the downside. So I feel fortunate to have had some of the people in my life that I've had.
Sometimes you have to see or have a bad coach in order to know what a really good coach is.
Yeah, but I'm sure those experiences are helping you as a coach, right?
I mean, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I've had some people that I've worked with over the years that, you know, knowing what I know now, I would never work with again. And so I'm much better prepared now as I, you know, figure out who I want to work alongside or who I want to hire or who I want to work for. Those are skill sets that, you know, me at 40 now wishes I could go back and teach me at 27 when I was first getting into the workforce. So, but I'm glad I went through those things.
But let's put this together. You were an athlete. You were coached well. You had a death experience or a near-death experience, and you recovered. You beat a drug addiction, and you're, you know, missing a liver or whatever you're missing. And you have won in that environment. That's amazing. I mean, your intestinal fortitude, assuming you still have your intestines, are.
I don't actually. That's I'm missing a large intestine.
Well, there you go.
The secret's out.
We couldn't tell actually.
Yeah. We're your secret's safe with us and about another 25,000 people. But I think that what you have to realize here is that all of these things combined make you a wonderful coach because you've been through the shit of what other people have never experienced.
So what do you tell someone when they're struggling?
Honestly, it depends what they're struggling with. You know, one of the things that I've really kind of hung my hat on over the years is working with people that everybody else has kind of rejected. You know, I've worked with people who were felons that I've helped turn their life around, and now they make, you know, low to mid six figures and they're in leadership positions. And I've worked with Lord knows how many addicts and alcoholics and people who've had bad relationship experiences. And so, you know, depending on my relationship with somebody on my team, you know, I can get into some of the deep, you know, shit that doesn't have necessarily to do with their day-to-day work, but is, you know, impacting them and how they think. And so I try to get in there and start to reprogram and rewire the way that they think about things. And if I can do that, you know, I find that they become much more receptive to actual, you know, on the job kind of skill set training, you know. So I look at my job is to make you a better person as well as a salesperson. And if I can do that, then, you know, I really think that I'll have made an impact on people. And if I do that enough times, then, you know, hopefully I'll win. Jeffrey told me I already won, but, you know,
you've
I don't
totally
feel that
won.
Way. I don't feel that way yet. You know, I got a lot more things that I want to do in a short amount of time that we're all here. So,
How often do you talk to your dad?
Candidly, not that much, you know, not because we don't have a good relationship. We have a really good relationship, but, you know, he's in California. He's been a professor at Chico State University for 40 years and he coaches, and he's, you know, kind of got a little bit of a workaholic gene that I've inherited. You know, and I'm 2 hours ahead of him in Austin, and I work for Qualia. I work for myself. I've, you know, done the book. I'm coaching my kids' little league teams and all this kind of stuff.
Are his courses online?
That's a good question. I don't know if they are. He's been an accounting. He's an accounting professor for 40 years, and we're very different in some ways, and very, very similar in others. He's a he's a very risk adverse kind of guy, and I'm not that way at all.
But he was such an influence on you. It would seem as though in his 70s that you would want to at least counsel him just a little bit more about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. We mean, I don't want it to sound like we never talk, but, you know,
well, I'm not the kind of person. Now.
Who, yeah. I'm going to have to call him now.
Like, oh, yeah.
To, I need to prepare you, Dad, that everybody that listens to the podcast thinks we have a weird relationship. No, but we do fun stuff. You know, last year I took him to England for 10 days, just the two of us. And we went to a bunch of European soccer games,
cool.
Traveled around, and you know, we find ways to chat and spend time together, but neither one of us are the type of people that, you know, is dying to talk on the phone every single day for, you know, 30 minutes just to catch up. But I'll see him in a couple weeks when we go back to California for Christmas.
So if people want to get a hold of you to find out where they can get your coaching or where they can get your startup advice, where would they go?
Well, I have a website, scottleaseconsulting.com. And I'm very active on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to try to find me.
Well, we wish you every success.
Well, thank you guys very much.
That was an amazing interview.
That was unbelievable. Where the hell was it? It was in the archives, but iTunes forgot to leave it up, and now it's up, and now... But where should our diehards go right now?
All right. If you want more, go to Facebook and search for the Seller Diehards official Facebook group. Or if you really want to get involved in the community, you can go to 2020, the numbers, 2020salesvision.com, and sign up for the waitlist to get into the 2020 Sales Vision group.
And speaking of 20, your investment will be $20.
That's right. It's $20 a month. $20 a month.
Live answers, interactions. It's unbelievable. Go there. Do it now.
It is so much fun. I love it. All right, guys. Peace out.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellerDieNetwork.com.